The Tom Woods Show, episode 2257.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody, we all know it is time for us to break up, but everybody's status quo bias is standing in the way of this obvious and humane solution. Check out my brand new ebook called National Divorce, The Peaceful Solution to Irreconcilable Differences, which you can get for free at nationaldivorce.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. I am delighted to be joined today by Joshua Stileman, who is executive producer of a film I cannot recommend to you more highly. It's called Anecdotals, and it's about all those people who have suffered in one way or another from the COVID shots. And of course, those people are just not really allowed to tell their story because, well, if we hear their story, that might undermine confidence in the vaccine, and we can't have that. So therefore, they have to live in some weird limbo somewhere where they can't really get medical care for what's happened to them, where there isn't all that much research going on into what can be done to help these people. These are just annoyances that the public health establishment would rather we ignore. But these are real people with real stories, and they are very compellingly told in this film. So, Josh, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, let's start with your own background, because I typed your name into a search engine just to find out a little bit about you. Because, yeah, I know, I hate when people say that to me, like, oh, no, look, 90% of it is false. But because you're not the, let's say, face of this film in the sense that you're not the narrator or the host or anything. So I want to know a little bit more about you. And I found out, I hadn't known about this, but I found out about your situation when you lived in New York City with the brewery, where you, I don't know if it was your brewery or you just worked there or what the situation was. But of course, in New York City, they introduced the so-called vaccine passport system. And apparently you had a thing or two to say about that.
I did indeed. So thanks again for having me. I'm a lifelong New Yorker. I was a longtime tech entrepreneur for a couple of decades. The brewery was very much a midlife crisis project of sorts. My wife and I started having some children. I wanted to open a business in the neighborhood I lived in. Really wanted to try something totally different than technology and wanted to try a manufacturing business. I always wanted to have a space in the community I lived in, and beer kind of felt like the intersection of those two things. So I co-founded the brewery and was CEO about 9 years ago. And business was great until, of course, the pandemic, which I think we both have some pretty strong opinions on what happened. Yeah. We made it. We pivoted to e-commerce. We saved everyone's jobs who wanted to still work there. We made it over the hump. I had never been wronger about anything in my entire life because I really thought we were heading to the roaring 20s when New York City was reopening. I myself did get vaccinated. I'll put vaccinated in air quotes. I got the J&J one and kind of rationalized it with, you know, I've put enough crap in my body through the years. How bad could it be? Admittedly, I was busy running a small business and holding my family together with duct tape and wasn't paying very close attention to what was going on. I was opposed to the lockdowns. I knew it didn't make sense, but I really just thought it was government incompetence and didn't really understand, kind of zoom out and figure out what was going on. But subsequent to that, the vaccine was rolled out, as I said. I got the J&J one, which I think at this stage obviously was pulled from the market. But my understanding is if it doesn't hurt you right away, you're pretty good. But my wife and lots of friends of mine got the mRNA shots. But in any event, as you said, the vaccine mandates were rolled out in late summer 2021. And I was just stunned that people in my community were okay with this. And I started asking a lot of questions, first of coworkers saying, you know, what are you worried about? Are you concerned that you're going to get COVID? And they're like, no, we know we already got COVID. We know it doesn't stop this. We're afraid of being called anti-vaxxers. So I said, do you understand the absurdity of this? You're afraid of being called a name that you're acknowledging is nonsensical. So in any event, I know initially, but my team said, do we go along with this? And I was put in this very precarious position of, we just saved all these people's jobs. Do we not comply and have to shut down the brewery? Because it was very obvious that they were going to send out the Gestapo and do inspections, which they did. I was also resentful that, you know, small business struggling after what was then about a year and a half into this, we had to hire someone to check papers at the door.
Oh.
So I sat at the first table and kind of confused everybody because When the kid who we hired to look at people's papers was walking in, I would just scream fascist. It was confusing.
Good for you, man.
Confusing to the person who worked there. Confusing to the customers who had no idea I was affiliated with the project. That was the CEO of the company. And really, we weren't turning people away. We were sort of keeping up with the theater. But all that said, it was horrifying. And I kept getting kind of louder and louder internally. And, you know, I had a staff meeting and said, listen, you know, I don't think you realize where this is going. And the people I work with were good people. I think they're mostly kids who didn't understand what was happening around them.
Yeah.
And caught by what I like to think about as the mind virus. I kept making noise. We were using the brewery as well as kind of an underground meeting space. So we had lots of people coming in, a lot of the teachers and public service workers who lost their jobs because of the mandates to organize. The Defeat the Mandates rally was one of the meeting places we used. But louder and louder, I heard from anyone who kind of worked at the brewery before the pandemic, knew me, knew my character, I think trusted me implicitly. There were some newer people who were making noise and, you know, submitting questions to our little anonymous suggest HR box about the anti-vax rhetoric being spread by Three's Brewing of leadership, that kind of thing. And I tried to have conversations with people. It's a little horrifying. And again, my understanding of the last few years is people don't really have an understanding of science or history. So,
oh, you don't say, really?
Yeah. So in any event, when I realized that I was banging my head against the wall and my team was not up for this, and I felt a little bit isolated, you know, I said, listen, ultimately, the way this ends is I'm going to have to sell the company because my own children are shut out of society. This, that some of my best friends are shut out on principle. I can never go along with this. This is not okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Nuremberg Code, none of this makes sense. So long story longer, I had been making noise on my own social media for months. I don't have a particularly big following. I've intentionally not been a public figure, though I had every opportunity to in tech. You know, I really just mostly trying to make noise with some of my friends who I know were paying attention, at least to what I was saying. So first, and I can send you the follow-up, but I had tweeted something about if we're not careful, what's happening right now with these vax mandates echo the beginning of what's happened in some other historical atrocities like the early sentiments expressed in the Jim Crow South, Nazi Germany, Stalinism, Maoism, so on and so forth. I went on to say that I'm not deluded enough to believe what we're dealing with was 1943 Germany. But from everything I learned from my family, who, by the way, were all Holocaust survivors, that what's happening now sure does resemble 1933. You know, it didn't get a ton of attention. You know, some people, yeah, I debated a couple of people online and that sort of thing. But then shortly thereafter, I posted a harsher message, which was a little bit uncharacteristic for me, but it said that vaccine mandates were a crime against humanity. And if you're not speaking out against them, you're a conspirator. So I didn't say this publicly, but I should mention here that I shared that right after I spoke to a friend who had recently lost her son after taking the COVID shot. And she was frustrated because no press will talk to her other than the Epoch Times. No one will even take her call. That same day, I got a call from a friend of mine who's a New York City school teacher who found out that his food stamps were being taken away. So he wasn't sure how he was going to feed his daughter. So I was pretty outraged about this. And in retrospect, the only thing I regret about that tweet was instead of saying conspirator, I should have said complicit. But, you know, poor word choice, but I don't regret it all. So quickly, I got a call from the New York Times, which I thought was interesting because we were a cool small business, but we're a small business in Brooklyn. We're not a multinational corporation. We employ about 100 people at the time, that sort of thing. And the reporter from the Times said, hey, would you like to talk about this? And I said, absolutely. I want to talk to everyone about this. And I got very excited about the call. We spoke for about 40 minutes. And I went on to explain how my family lineage, my grandmother was the sole survivor of a town in Poland. I'm named after a man who burned in a gas chamber. And again, I don't know where this is going, but I know when you other people in society, it doesn't lead to good things. So about 10 minutes later, the Times printed something that might as well have said, CEO of Three's Brewing is an anti-Semite, anti-vaxxer.
Of course. I mean, that's the way it is. Yeah, that's our society for you.
Of course, with no acknowledgement of my family lineage or anything like that. So my coworkers freaked out. Our partners freaked out. We had lots of people asking me to apologize. So I wrote a piece. I set up a Substack. I wrote a piece that opened with, I stand by every one of my words. And then they really freaked out. And we had like 300 accounts because we owned 5 locations in New York City, but we also distribute to hundreds and hundreds of bars, restaurants, shops, that sort of thing. So that's a manufacturing company. So about 300 accounts canceled almost immediately.
Oh, unbelievable.
My head of sales a few weeks later told me that when he was going back out and doing the roadshow, you know, to try to get them back on board, they didn't know I was Jewish. They only heard, you know, I was an anti-Semite. So at that time, I decided that I really didn't want to work there anymore. I mean, it was sort of tragic on a personal level because it was almost a decade of my life and a ton of my family thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I knew I could try to stay and salvage the company. Candidly, the idea of going on a tour trying to explain to people why I'm a good guy or that I might even have a point sounded terrible. So instead, I said, I need to get my family out of New York City. I need to get the hell out of here. This place has gone crazy. And I knew my energy was going in a different direction. So I resigned, which I thought was in the best interest of the company and for me personally. So that's my long-winded preamble of what happened with the brewery.
Yeah, but that's a story people needed to hear. They absolutely needed to hear. That's not extraneous in any way. So I understand you ended up leaving New York City altogether.
I did. I'm up in the Hudson Valley. Interestingly, right after that, I got lots and lots of messages, more supportive than I would have thought. A couple of people told me to die of polio, but for the most part, they were very supportive messages. The most interesting I got, though, was from a Holocaust survivor who I don't even know how she found me, but she's become a very good friend. Vera Shiraz is her name. And she called and said, hey, do not apologize. Everything you said, this is an 88-year-old woman who lives on the Upper West Side. Everything you said was correct. And this is exactly what's happening right now. And do you want to go on Tucker Carlson with me? And my thought was, you know, I appreciate you're saying people need to hear the story. At that time, my feeling was, I'm not a talking head. I don't want to be a pawn in the left-right thing in the culture war. And I didn't want to do that to my children. So my feeling was, I'm just going to get the hell out of here quietly. But I knew, and we can get into the film, I had already met Jennifer. I was already working on this project with her. So my feeling was, all right, they hate me now. Wait till they'll find out I'm making a film about vaccine injuries. That's not going to go over particularly well. So I knew if I was going to be a part of this movement, then I need to drop all other professional commitments.
Oh, this is just, well, you know, it puts me in mind of a guy I know you know, or you know of, Michael Malice, who's a very good friend, and who came to the U.S. when he was just a little kid. He came from Ukraine when it was still part of the Soviet Union. And he lived in New York City his whole life, and he loved it. He never learned to drive, because why would he need to? He lives in New York City. And even he had to leave New York City because of what they did. And the way he put it to me was, they killed my girl. That just crushes me. I mean, yeah, he lives in Texas now. He's happy enough. All his friends are down there. But he's no Texan. Yeah. You know, let's face it. He's a New Yorker, and they took it from him. And even I mean, this is a trivial thing compared to what you guys endured, but, you know, I went to graduate school at Columbia, and I really came to love the city, despite the politics. That's irrelevant. There's more to life than politics. There's so many things about the city that I love so much. I used to visit it multiple times a year, year after year, and then I went over 2 years not visiting it because I'm not going to be part of the craziness. I'm not going to go along with the vaccine passport. That's for darn sure. And so I used to visit Malice multiple times a year, and I didn't. I just couldn't set foot in that place.
Yeah.
So it's just awful. It's just awful what was done.
Yeah, I had a card. I burned it. I put myself in exile because my feeling was that I can't participate in a biomedical apartheid society.
Yeah.
It was also, what was most shocking to me, though, was that this supposedly inclusive place that has the flag du jour for whatever the group being ostracized is of the moment, decided that it was okay that this one be discriminated against because it was unfashionable. When I would start having conversations with people about, hey, you know, they never actually tested this for transmission. You're only met back with ad hominems. You're an anti-vaxxer. You're a right-wing lunatic. And my politics personally are across the board. At this point, burn it down because it's rotten to the core. But during the time at Threes, when we were organizing groups, there was one particular night we had a meetup of a bunch of concerned citizens. Some were people who had been laid off from their jobs. Some were just concerned parents who didn't know whether or not to give their kids the shots. A couple of doctors, a couple of scientists, and Jennifer Sharp was a filmmaker. A friend of mine brought her there because she had been vaccine injured. And we kind of went around the room and all kind of told our own story and our own vantage point. We're talking, you know, about kind of what we think might be going on. It was, by the way, it was a very disparate group of people from all walks, really different views, both on the shots, on the political climate, those sorts of things. But it was a lovely conversation. we got to Jennifer, who went last, and she started telling the story about how she's, by the way, a liberal woman from LA. She got the first Pfizer shot and immediately started getting, you know, her face went numb. She started getting paresthesia down her leg. And when she posted about her reaction on her Facebook, and her friends started yelling at her that she is contributing to vaccine hesitancy. And she's like, guys, this is my life. This is what's happening to me. And she went to her doctor, who ultimately was very supportive, but she asked for an exemption for the second shot. And the doctor said, I'd love to give you one. I know it was the vaccine, but if I give you an exemption, I'll lose my license. So I'm sitting there shaking, a combination of sadness and rage, because I knew a couple of people who were vax injured, but hearing this particular story from this woman was so compelling. And then she went on to tell us about this group she was in that at the time had a few hundred people. It's now up to several thousand. All have the same stories, very similar side effects, very similar reactions from their community, very similar reactions from their doctor. And she went on to tell us she was a filmmaker. And after we went around the room, you know, we all had some drinks. I pulled her aside. I'm like, you're making this movie, right? And she said, you know, I'm thinking about doing a story, a fiction story called Love in the Time of COVID, because as it turns out, she met her boyfriend who was super supportive through this time. But, you know, I said, how long is that going to take? And she's like, you know, maybe a couple of years. I was like, nope, it needs to come out faster. The story needs to be told.
Yeah, right.
And I wasn't the only one telling her, but we just kept in touch and became friends. And then she lost a job. I think it was the Sundance Film Festival, or she lost a job because she didn't have a card. And she said, all right, I'm going to make the movie. And she called me. She said, are you still in? I said, absolutely. And she's the creative force behind this. I mean, it's her story, but you've seen the film. She goes on and she found, it wasn't hard to find, but there's lots of other stories like hers. And I think she tells it in a way that is unlike some of the other content that's been out there. It's really balanced, really non-political at all, and just about human stories. And I guess our hope was people are going to see this and maybe open their hearts and minds that maybe there's more going on than they're aware of. The fact that people don't know these stories exist is really telling, and it shows that COVID has been a story of censorship, not science, the whole time.
Yeah, no question about it. She, as I told you before we started recording, is extremely compelling. Her approach to this, the tone, everything about it is absolutely perfect. I mean, she's angry, frustrated, confused, but not in a way that comes across as hostile. Just it comes across instead as somebody who has suffered an injustice and has, in effect, been asked to suffer it in silence. Because as I indicated at the beginning, there's really no room for somebody like her in all this. They panicked the population. The only way they were going to ever get society back to normal is by saying, okay, all right, look, there's a vaccine. Now you can all, it's all over and we are the saviors. And so if that doesn't work, or if that causes these problems in some people, that's not part of the story they're trying to tell. So that doesn't work for them. So therefore, you're going to be disappeared. You're just going to, you're not part of anything. And she conveys this so, so brilliantly. There's so many things you mentioned here. You talked about her being unable to get an exemption, a medical exemption, even though she obviously has all the signs that she deserves a medical exemption. It was hard to get an exemption from anywhere throughout this thing because of the implicit and sometimes not so implicit threats to doctors and their licenses. But in California in particular, it was more or less impossible, from what I understand. Impossible.
Yeah.
Because doctors were so muzzled.
That's right. And now California has Bill 2098, which says that if you speak against medical consensus, you lose your license, which is madness.
Yeah. I mean, you would have to, again, it's easy for me to say, I'm not somebody who's built up a medical practice over 20 years, but I don't see how you can practice medicine under those conditions. That's insane. That's insane. The medical consensus, quote unquote, was that everybody should be put on a ventilator.
That's right.
And then some obscure doctor made an amateur YouTube video saying, I don't know about this. I actually think the ventilators might be making things worse. And then other people realized that he was right. Well, good thing by that point, we hadn't already frozen, you know, into immobility the story of COVID, or we wouldn't have gotten that information.
California, much like New York, has gone crazy. The medical consensus at one time, I think it was like 4 to 5 doctors said Lucky Strike was the best cigarette. The medical consensus
right.
gave formaldehyde and killed infants. The medical consensus gave lobotomies to people who were depressed. I mean, there's Vioxx. It goes on and on and on. Sugar.
Plus, who would think that under these conditions, when everybody is panicked and all kinds of wildly unscientific demands are being made of people, don't go to the beach, or is this totally stupid, ridiculous things? Who would think that a consensus forged under those conditions would be beyond question, right? That would be precisely the kind of alleged consensus that would be the shakiest.
That's right. That's right. Although that's been, and I think that's implicit in the film, that's been part of this whole thing is don't ask questions, just comply and do as you're told.
Yeah.
And sadly, I think in some ways this was a virtue test and we failed as a species. I'm hopeful we still have time and we could turn this around, but I was blown away by friends of mine who I know are good people that were just duped by this whole thing. And really, in some instances, even cut off ties with me for being anti-vaxxer. And I'm like, I did get the shots. I think I'm more credible than most people because I can admit I was duped. This doesn't make any sense. So to your point, though, about Jennifer, she's an incredible woman, really, really extraordinary person. And I think she's done a great job making a film that first and foremost just shows compassion and asks a lot of questions. She's not trying to connect the dots on any kind of global conspiracy or anything that might be happening. She's just trying to create a voice for these people that exist. These are real people. And by the way, I showed the film to a few friends. One said, oh my goodness, I had a heart attack 2 weeks after my booster shot. Do you think it was the vaccine? I said, what does your doctor think? And this, by the way, is a 48-year-old healthy guy who was surfing at the time. Mm. And he said, my doctor never mentioned it. I said, your doctor didn't mention that heart problems are a very common side effect of the mRNA shots? He said, nope. I have another friend who went into sepsis. I have another friend who had the exact same symptoms as Jennifer with paresthesia and numbness in his face. So what's remarkable to me is there are people, I believe, who are actually suffering from vaccine injuries and don't even know it because of the gaslighting.
Oh, absolutely. And not to mention the censorship or the suppression, let's say, of their voices. Even though everything they're saying is true, this thing happened to me. There's no denying that that's true. That's not misinformation, but it's implicitly misinformation because anything you say negative might make some people have second thoughts about the shots. And so we can't have that. So therefore, you're not allowed to have a story. You're not allowed to exist. You're not allowed to spread it on social media because we're going to take it down, even though we can't deny a single word you've said.
That's right. That's right. And I think very cleverly, the whole point with the anecdotals is we keep hearing correlation isn't causality. And I agree with that. But if you have enough anecdotes, you have an observation group and they require study. And no one's studying these people. They're everywhere. If you look at VAERS, which is the vaccine safety database monitored by the CDC and the FDA, set up only after the vaccine companies were given immunity from lawsuit, it's a screaming signal. There have been more reports of VAERS than all vaccines combined since they set this up in 1990. And when I bring that up to friends, they say, well, you've gamed it. There are people are gaming it, not me specifically. But I say, well, are you aware that it's a lot of work to submit a VAERS report? Are you aware that usually only 1% to 5% of all side effects are actually reported to VAERS? And by the way, it's also a felony to report a fraudulent VAERS report, and they're vetted by the CDC. So this is willful ignorance at this stage. And these people are victims. How could this possibly be an anti-vaccine film? It's about people who all took the vaccine. I'll say so-called vaccine because they had to change the definition of a vaccine to retrofit this in. But yeah, this is really wild. But rather than kind of exploring the why of all this, I think Jennifer did a really great job of just putting the stories and the humanity of this front and center.
Right. And maybe we do need to talk about bigger issues and make connections. This one funded that one and this one influences this and that. But right now, I think we need to be, let's say, parsimonious in what we're demanding of the viewer. Just demand as little as possible.
That's right.
Just simply acknowledge that these, as you say, are real people and they've suffered greatly and society won't acknowledge them. I thought it was very revealing when one of the people in the film, a very young woman, said something like, all my Democrat friends, when they look at me and talk to me, they don't know how to interact with me. They don't know what to say. Because, of course, she doesn't fit into their world.
That's right.
She's not supposed to be there. She's an annoyance. But yet they obviously have some feelings for her because they're friends.
Yep.
But geez, you're ruining our whole narrative. So therefore, forget the compassion. Forget the, maybe I should have second thoughts about this. We don't know what to do with you.
Yeah, that's right. And I've had similar experiences. I consider myself to be a liberal, but by the old definition of the word.
Yeah, that's gone, man. Unfortunately, that's gone.
I think liberal now means illiberal. And it means you must comply. You must fit in this box. And ultimately, I do think that in some ways, Trump derangement syndrome birthed the whole COVIDian movement. Because if he were still president, everyone would flip sides. People would be screaming about VAERS. Everyone would know what VAERS is. It would be the only story on CNN every day. And that's all we'd be talking about, are the vaccine injured. But he's not. So that needs to get swept under the rug. And it's really wild. And if you look at, you know, again, where is the burden of proof, right? Because we were told the vaccine stopped infection. There's lots, I'm sure you've seen them. There's lots of clips from Bill Gates to Rachel Maddow to Joe Biden saying, if you get vaccinated, you won't get COVID.
And by the way, that's in the film. Those clips
are
in the film.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're so devastating. It's so devastating to put them in there because they sound so stupid now. So stupid.
And at the time, everyone bought it, right? So this is like straight out of 1984. The party told you to reject your own eyes and ears. So at this stage, we're there. And in my personal life, I have some friends that just, I think they're beleaguered. Like they just don't want to deal with me anymore. And
yeah,
my feeling is I'm not moving on from this. You decided it was okay. And again, I have forgiveness in my heart, but I'm not going to forget, and we're not going to move on without a reconciliation. That's simply not okay, because then you're being told it's okay to do and you're going to do it again. So I think as a culture, we need to have a reckoning. And first, and back to anecdotals, what's most important is that people know these people exist. Many of them need help.
Yeah.
They need help physically. They need help mentally. As you saw in the film, lots of these people are committing suicide. I recently learned from a family member that I hadn't spoken to in a little while that he was vaccine injured, and he insisted it was the vaccine. His doctor actually agreed, told him not. He's in Florida, where you're allowed to speak truth.
Yeah.
His doctor told him not to get any more shots, but he had friends who told him it's not the vaccine, it can't be. And apparently he was suicidal. He didn't even know I was involved in this movement and only heard about the film and then gave me a call. I couldn't believe it. So that's how close.
Oh, people, yeah. As this thing spreads, people are going to be coming out of the woodwork. And I'm not necessarily recommending this, but I'm just entertaining a fantasy scenario just out of curiosity to think about what would happen if the vaccine injured movement made as its slogan. Again, I'm not recommending this, but I'm just curious. Trump did this to me, because that would blow Rachel Maddow's mind. Like, how do you respond to that? Trump did this to me.
What's really funny is a buddy of mine who was a Donald Trump supporter until the lockdowns started telling everyone in, you know, we lived in roughly the same community in Brooklyn, and he was calling it the Trump Vax. He was just branding it the way you would hotels or steaks. And it didn't resonate at all. Yeah, funnily enough, I was not a Donald Trump supporter. And I'm still a right-wing conspiracy theorist nowadays.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't matter. Yeah, there is zero nuance. Zero nuance. Hey, folks, it's time to take just a minute for Woods to improve your life yet again. Have you lost count by now? For 3 years, I have been a happy customer of Happily Date Boxes. Every month, you get a box in the mail with a different theme for a date that you can enjoy in the comfort of your own home. And it gives you an opportunity to spend quality time with your significant other, even with your busy schedule. Just within the past week, my wife and I enjoyed the most recent of these, and this one had a morning theme, so it came with coffee. It came with the ingredients to make crepes, which we did together. As always, it comes with a curated custom date playlist, which we use on Spotify, a series of conversation starters, which we always enjoy. And then it included this time a game we played where we had to write down our answers to different questions about ourselves and then try to anticipate what the other person's answers were, which is hilarious, by the way. And then there was a bunch of other fun stuff, trivia, crossword puzzle, Mad Libs, other boxes. We've done crafts. We've done an exercise where they say you're on a desert island and here are 10 possible things that you might have in your possession. Rank them in order of how useful they would actually be to you. Very interesting and fun stuff. And if you are the one who comes up with the idea, your significant other is going to think you are absolutely amazing and you do not have to say Woods told me to do this. You just say, I just happen to be a really, really thoughtful person. Well, take 50% off your first date at tomwoods.com/date. That's 50% off your first date at tomwoods.com/date. We've been talking a little bit about Democrats, Trump, liberals, different definitions of liberal. Another great thing about this film is the emphasis on how cross-ideological this whole thing is. That the host, Jennifer herself, as you said, comes from Los Angeles. She was at, I guess, at least one of the rallies against the mandates and stuff like that. And I have friends who were at that also who loved Los Angeles. And by the way, both of those friends I have in mind have also left Los Angeles. Very, very sad. But she is very compelling because she's so introspective. She says at the end that I was at this rally with, and in this whole movement that I've become involved in, with so many people who look at the world so differently from how I do, and people I've argued against over the course of my life, and yet there they are. And we're all, she didn't put it this way, but she could appropriate that phrase, we're all in it together.
Yep.
And she says, you know, maybe I've been the closed-minded one all these years. I mean, after everything she's been through, she's sitting there reproaching herself, you know, for things she may have done wrong in her own life. And it's so compelling. And you look at it, there are clips of speeches from people saying, look, this isn't red or blue or left or right or whatever. This is just right and wrong. This is just American. This is an American issue. And we're Americans. And for heaven's sake, we don't deserve this. It's so good. I really, really, you know, the trouble of releasing as many podcast episodes as I do is that I interview so many authors and I interview so many documentary filmmakers that I can understand it overwhelms my audience. Say, for heaven's sake, which one should I read? What should I watch? You got to watch this one. You got to watch it first by yourself and then think about those people in your life who should see it and have a viewing party at your house and watch it together. That's what I recommend.
I'm so glad to hear the film resonated. And there were little subtle things that it does seem like really, really stuck with you. So not accidentally, Jennifer decided to make the sort of color of the branding of the film purple, which was certainly a subtle but very deliberate act.
Oh, and I love that one of the speakers at one of the rallies who was kind of on the left said, look, today I'm wearing purple.
Yep.
Because purple is the confluence of red and blue.
That's right.
Beautiful.
I'm not sure if this is where she pulled her influence from, but if you look throughout the film, when she does these testimonials, in the beginning, she's wearing blue, then she's wearing red, and then she wears purple.
Oh, darn, I wish I had been paying closer attention to that.
Little subtle Easter egg there, but I thought that was a really, really nice touch because it sort of shows her own personal journey. You know, again, very left-leaning person. And again, I hate the left-right paradigm because we're all people and we're all nuanced and really, I believe humans want the same thing. We want to put food on the table and, you know, love our partners and earn a good wage and that sort of stuff. And, you know, we may argue about the means and methods about how we get there. But somewhere along the line, this blind tribalism is killing our republic. And I think if we're not careful, this debate, I don't want to speak in hyperbolic terms, but this debate might be final last stage of this, right? So I think people like Jennifer, it really shows a sign of intelligence that she can look inward and say, you know, instead of being, if it were me, I might just be angry and lash out at the world. Instead, she's being really reflective and saying, you know, what have I been wrong about through the years? And let me ask more questions. And by doing that, she's far more persuasive than just yelling at people.
Oh, absolutely. And could you imagine where we'd be if more people were willing to say, what have I been wrong about over the years?
Yeah, maybe we'd all love each other again. Instead of just considering each other cartoons of whatever the divisiveness on TV is telling us to think about.
And you know, I thought also that was another interesting part of the film when there are a few minutes where some of these vaccine injured people have obviously been asked about what their philosophical background, political affiliation is. And they'll say things like, I lean Republican, but I have some liberal views, or I this, that, and the other thing. And the thing is, I live in a kind of weird bubble where almost everybody I interact with knows exactly who they are, and they have a very consistent list of things they believe in. And it was useful to be reminded that's not really the lived experience of most people.
Right. Most people, I don't think, even think about what the issues are or how you solve them. I think most people want to be told what to do. And we've seen that time and time again, particularly over the last 3 years. And I think the most interesting part of this is the kind of strange bedfellows that this has created, because you've got people that otherwise might not have met each other and have come together through this movement. And it's funny because Jennifer, she probably could have worked on this film for another, you know, month or two and polished it a bit more and made it like a really great documentary for film festivals and stuff like that. And she knew she needed to get it out because this is, I do
it's
think
it's hot now.
I think it stands alone as a very important artifact and hopefully will, but it's part of a movement. And to your point about watching it alone, the hope is people will watch it and people who are maybe already awake or maybe awakened by this film can then pass it on to someone who is not yet awake and say, here's a reasonable narrative and a reasonable piece of content that you should check out. And it might open your eyes or maybe even get you to start asking some questions.
And sometimes I've recommended that if there's something you want your friends to read or watch, but you're not sure they will, you offer them, look, if there's something you think I should watch or I should read, then in exchange, you send that over and I'll do that and then we'll have a discussion. If that's what it takes to get them to watch, then by all means do that. But this is really, it's the way it's made for the general public. It really is. It, as I say, it doesn't make any ideological demands of you. It doesn't make any wild statements that are unsupported. And it doesn't even say we have exactly the scientific explanation of what's going on here. It says we don't.
That's right.
And it's true that this is, to some extent, anecdotal. But what does that matter? We're people, and we've had these things happen to us. And that's it. We don't have to make any further statements about it. We're here. We exist. We're human beings. We have humanity. We deserve to be treated accordingly.
I would argue that there's more evidence that these anecdotes exist than there is evidence that the vaccines work at all.
Oh, I'm certainly heading down that road.
You know, she was very careful. I think in part because of her own social circles, she was very careful to make sure she was speaking directly to friends and family. And again, she, like me in Brooklyn, she's in LA and the swarm is pretty bad there. So I think she really wanted to make sure that this film was bulletproof and no one would say, hey, well, so-and-so is a liar or discredited. These are all nearly credible voices. In fact, it's a fun story. Early screening to someone she showed the film to, they said, there were a couple of people and she said, you know, is this person sketchy? Should I take him out? We did a little research and there were a couple of people that we said, you know what? They're too controversial. Let's take him out. But one of them, someone questioned Dr. Robert Malone being in the film. And I was like, Jennifer, he's the co-inventor of mRNA. He's certainly credible. Like if you look at incentives, right? If this guy had a chance to be considered the Jonas Salk of his time, why would he speak against his own invention if he didn't really believe it? What does he have to gain from that?
Yeah.
I'm someone who likes to zoom out and try to think about society.
Yeah, I actually never thought of it that way, but that makes perfect sense.
If I worked in the mailroom on mRNA and I thought it worked, I'd be thumping my chest.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Look, the website is anecdotalsmovie.com. I'll have it linked at tomwoods.com/2257, our episode number. But anecdotalsmovie.com is where you can go to watch it. Any last words? I don't know what I need to do to tell people here. I mean, there are a lot of things I want my listeners to do. There are a lot of things I want them to read. Yep. There are emails of mine I want them to open. But I'm telling you, chuck all that for the time being. The top priority I have for you right now, and I understand that we're releasing this right at Christmas and your life's really busy, but after Christmas tends to be a slightly lazy time. And that should give you the time you need to tune in and watch this thing. I'm telling you, you're going to thank me. You're going to thank me. It's anecdotalsmovie.com. A-N-E-C-D-O-T-A-L-S movie.com. So for all you bad spellers out there, I've already removed that excuse not to watch it there.
Your supporting this film means so much to us. So thank you for that. We did debate the release date and talked about, do we wait till after the holidays? The conclusion we came to was, even if some people watch it, it's going to make for some really uncomfortable holiday conversation, which we're in full support of.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to mention is that within 24 hours of uploading, because we talked about, do we try to sell this film? And the conclusion we came to is, it's too hot. No one's going to touch it. Maybe in time, maybe, you know, in 5 years when it's okay to talk about this, maybe Netflix will buy the movie or something. But for now, we said, no, the goal is let's get as many people just to watch it as possible. So we put it up on YouTube and it was pulled within 24 hours for medical misinformation.
Yeah, because these people don't exist. They're not allowed to exist. So it has to be pulled.
It's streaming on Anecdotal's website, as you said. There are backups on Odyssey and Rumble right now, just in case.
Yeah, good.
See, and there's also social profiles on Twitter and Instagram, anecdotalsmovie.com. So,
all right.
Thank you so much.
Josh, you're a hero for what you did here. And again, giving it away to the general public because you believe in it. That's super heroic. That is super, super heroic. And I hope you are rewarded 100-fold for what you've done here. So thanks so much.
Well, Jennifer's the hero for making the film. I'm just a helper. But
and her too. And her too. Well, my thanks to you both.
Great talking to you, Tom.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. And I'll see you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free. And we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.